It's the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. Matthew with you here. And if you listened to our recent episode on Rangers of Shadowdeep Blood Moon, you'll know that we messed it up a bit. We didn't quite interpret the rules properly and we couldn't really finish the game. So on this episode, Robert and I get together again to exorcise those demons, or exorcise those werewolves as it was, and play it properly this time to a conclusion. So find out how we got on, what we thought of it and all that jazz. And then we're going to talk a wee bit about AI. We're going to play around with some AI software and discuss the ways that that might potentially be usable in this hobby. So we've got all that to come later on in the episode. But first up, let's head back to the world of Rangers of Shadowdeep. So here we are again, Robert, back Blood Moon 2, back in the habit.
Absolutely, we're ready to deal some damage.
Yeah, I mean, you say we're ready. We've been ready for a while, haven't we? Because we're halfway through this rematch of the Blood Moon scenario with Rangers of Shadowdeep.
Yes, it's been quite the slaughter, and I'm feeling good about it.
Yeah, so to get the listener up to speed, like, we played this scenario before and got horribly wrong with the unveiling of the werewolf. So we were making the mistake of giving all our auxiliary companions individual investigation scores. So now we've corrected the error of our ways and we're doing a combined investigation score. It's currently sitting at 9, Robert. So pretty much the next clue that we open, it's probably going to turn one of our companions into the werewolf, isn't it?
It is. And I know it's not going to be the red-haired Orla, because she's only got 2 clues, I think, and they've already come out of the deck, or been the result of the roll or whatever. So she's off the hook. So I don't mind Orla being next to my main character, Grub, but the rest of them, I'm going to keep them at arm's length, or should I say 14 inches or so, make sure they can't get to me in one turn when they eventually look up at the moon and decide now's the time.
Yeah, and it's been, like, for the first half of the game, it's been almost worryingly easy, apart from a couple of wee blips, but... You know, we started getting shots away straight away. Like, again, that wolf, the only wolf that starts on the table who got shot and killed the first time, that happened again. Like, Grub shot him, killed him. I went up, shot a couple of flies. We shot the rats. We were just, like, every shot we took basically killed something. The only little slip-up was Seb tried to fight a giant fly and got his arse kicked. He's down to, like, 4 health. The fly rolled a 20. Seb had the help of Coven, so even the +2 modifier on that, he still got absolutely bummed by the fly. Has anyone ever said that before? Bummed by a fly? I mean, I have now. So, yeah, so that was one of the blips. And then basically the game is we're all filtering into this manor house. There is a werewolf in there already. He's been produced by an event card. So Grub went marching in there and got into a bit of a fight with him and received some damage. They actually tied, didn't they? But
22 each.
Yeah, so a high scoring fight. But the problem is that the werewolf just regenerates the next turn, whereas Grub doesn't, because he's human. And you had a look through your special abilities and stuff like that, so we made a bit of a faux pas there, because we could have avoided that, couldn't we?
Yeah, he's got an ability called Dive for Cover, which means that if an evil figure is looking to move towards me, I can use that, and then it has to just act as if my guy is not on the table, i.e. like a random wandering around or whatever. But I only read that afterwards, much to my disappointment.
Have you got your sheet there to have a look through your special abilities and spells? Because
I can grab it.
We're notoriously guilty of forgetting about these things until after the fact. I mean, like I say, the game up until now has been so easy that we've not needed them, but...
Yeah. Same for pushing people back as well, because we've been one-shotting
everyone. We always forget to do that, yeah. I mean, they couldn't have done that in that fight there, because it was a tie, but...
Yeah. Yeah, no pushbacks if you both win.
Aye, so what you all got there? Heroic abilities and spells.
Steady aim.
Steady aim, let's have a look at that. Steady aim, steady aim, steady aim.
+5 shoot for 1 shooting roll. And it must be declared before the roll is made. So, like, you'll say, right, I'm using steady aim, then you roll a 20, probably.
And blend into the shadows, that was the one you just mentioned, wasn't it?
Yes.
This ability may be used if an evil figure is about to make a move that would take it into combat. Aye, so you literally could have You could have used that. You didn't. We've got Focus. Focus DIY.
Yeah.
The ranger may add +8 to any one skill roll. He must declare he is using the ability before he rolls.
So like read runes. I made a read runes roll earlier. Yeah. Just managed it. Orla had to roll strength or no, lockpick to get in the door.
Aye.
So Grub could, yeah, you've got skills like acrobatics, ancient lore, swim.
My ranger actually failed a will roll because there was a howl or something, like a wolf's howl, which I don't know where it came from because there's no wolves on the table, but there was a wolf's howl and he shat his breeks. He had to miss a turn because he failed the roll. Your last one there, dive for cover. The ranger may add +10 to his fight roll when rolling against a shooting attack. He must declare he's using this ability before he rolls.
I'd said dive for cover, but it was blending into the shadows to stop the guy attacking him.
Yeah, because I don't think we could face a shooting attack in this scenario because nobody's got... Well, there's just nobody to shoot at you anyway, even if they did have something. There is literally one werewolf on the table, that's it. All the flies are dead, all the rats are dead. And you know, for this game being a wolf game and I've got all these wolf miniatures, like the two games combined, I think we've had one wolf on the table for a quarter of a turn and that's been it. So presumably they could keep popping out of the events deck, but it just never happens to us. So you've got one spell...
Magic Bolt.
The caster may make a +5 magic shooting attack against one figure within line of sight. This attack ignores penalties for cover and intervening terrain.
Yeah, and it says here, proxy as pistol. So it's basically like using a pistol for the stats.
The miniature, he's got a wee pistol. I thought, like, you know, for the fluff, that's just his gun and he could fire it once because it's...
Yeah.
One of the really old school things that you're going to have to take a week off your work to reload.
Oh, like a musket. A hand musket. Mm. That sounds like a euphemism.
Plainway's hand musket. And the game passed them by. Let's have a wee look at what I've got. Harold Half-Orc, my ranger. We have Deadly Shot. The ranger may use this ability if he has rolled a natural 18 or 19 during a shooting action. There's fat chance of that. Treat this roll as a critical hit. So, I mean, in theory, if I shoot at a werewolf and roll an 18 or 19, I could just kill him then, presumably.
That is a worthwhile spell to keep in mind, I think.
Pity that the werewolves are always going to be in combat with people because...
You can't shoot.
I can, but I might kill... somebody else.
So my best bet might be for Grub, who's in combat with him, to win the next fight, shove him back and then say, let him have it, Harry.
Aye, everyone get out and we'll set the house on fire. We'll put the table over the door and set the house on fire.
Aye.
What we got next? Evade. The ranger may use this ability if he activates whilst in combat. The ranger may make a free 1-inch move to leave the combat. That would come in handy for you.
Yeah.
No figure may force combat during this move. After this move, the ranger completes his activation as normal.
Yeah, because I was asking you, is there a way in combat to deactivate and move away, which you can do in some games like D&D, but in this, you must have the ability.
Here's another one that would have came in handy for you. Frenzied Attack. The ranger may add +5 to one fight roll. He must declare he's using the ability before he rolls.
Yeah. It's not so much the fight as the actual damage.
Yeah, yeah.
Getting him put, you know, under before he regenerates.
And then my final one's Transpose, and I use that in conjunction with Vinny the Vulture. So me and Vinny could swap places at any point. That's a funny thing, isn't it? Vinny, again, we take Vinny on this expedition because there's a pond and there's a boat with a clue in it. So Vinny does what he does, and he flew out there to the boat. And what does he find? An old man who's still just sitting on the boat. I've not even tried to make him swim. Like, there was no point. He's so weak that... And if you keep him alive, you get a couple of points. So we've just left him out there on the boat.
As opposed to drown him.
Yeah, because when he jumps in, he's got to like take rolls for the cold water and there could be zombies. So he's on the boat. I like the thought that after this mission, we will just wave cheerio to him and go.
We've got your XP, old son.
Aye, see you later. Good luck with the swim. So that's it. Everything is heading towards the house, but we're about to do the old Scooby-Doo. We're about to pull the mask off somebody, and it turns out it was them all along.
Sykes.
So, I don't know. I'm kind of hoping it's... I'm hoping it's somebody who's outside the house. That's almost nobody at the moment. Just Sebastian. He's standing out there, so who knows?
Never liked him. Always thought he was shifty.
Yeah, well, not a very good lumberjack, I heard. He's... often selling those manufactured plastics as wood. And people put them on their fires and black smoke fills their living room and they die horrible deaths. Frick. So I've heard anyway. That's it. Let's reconvene at the end of the game then.
Exciting.
All right then, Robert. We've just killed the final werewolf. It was beat to death in an orgy of bloodlust by Orla, wasn't it?
Yes.
She was kind of surrounding it. We've got Grubb there. We've got Gunther there. Vinny, he was getting involved, even though he was very full up from eating all those mutilated corpses. So she managed to... We were kind of chipping away, weren't we? Because you have this thing with the werewolves where they regenerate after the turn. So over the course of like the ranger phase, the companion phase and creature phase, you're just whittling down his health. And you know that like if you fail to take him down, it's basically back to the start. On the next turn, but fortunately we've put him on his arse, and that's all she wrote.
Yes, and they say that the first casualty of war is either innocence or truth, but in this case it was actually Nicolan.
Yeah, that's right. He was the werewolf, wasn't he? I'm talking shite. Coven was the werewolf. Nicolan then managed to get killed by the werewolf that once was Coven.
Yeah, have a go, hero. Ran out there. Up to the werewolf and came worse off, unfortunately. So we've got a wee role to do for him shortly.
Yeah, that's right. We had the werewolf who was in the house for almost the whole game, and he was killed by... Who actually killed him? It was Grubb. Grubb killed him. Up in the house there. And then, when we finally got the last of the clue tables, it turned out that Coven was the werewolf, and he was just outside the manor house, so we had to kind of turn and make our way back down there. Grubb found the magic, the silver dagger, I should say.
Yeah.
A fat lot of good it did him. He got a fancy wee pair of slippers as well, which, you know, I'm sure they look very nice, but they didn't really help much, did they?
It was useful for moving through an empty house.
Yeah, aye.
Very good. Slippers for inside the house and boots for outside.
The end of the game is basically you either kill both werewolves, which has happened, or the werewolves kill all of your people, and that's not happened. So we lost Seb. Like Seb, as we said earlier on, he got a dulling off a fly, which is quite funny because he's supposed to be a big strong man, but then he tried to wade in and fight the werewolf. Had loads of people around him to help, and he ended up getting murdered. So again, might not be dead because you do a roll on them, but those were our two casualties, weren't they?
Yeah, malaria got him.
We did remember to do a couple of wee special abilities, didn't we? Like Harold got attacked by a wolf who came out of the barn, and I used frenzied attack to dispose of him. And then I think Grubb used one of his, didn't he?
He used about three, I think. He used magic, steady aim to give him +5 to his shoot on top of his three, which didn't work. Unfortunately, the roll was just against him. There was the skill roll for the armory to get the sword, the silver dagger, sorry, in the first place. That was +8 to his skill, so he was able to get the dagger, which did a fair bit of damage on the werewolf before Orla finished him off. And I'm sure there was one other thing he tried as well, but yeah. He did well. It was funny, once the fight started to turn and people were dropping, it was like, what are those abilities again?
Well, that's it. I thought, this is again, it's just far too easy. But there was a moment where the werewolf suddenly dropped a couple of folk, and you thought, this... And then a fly popped up, which in isolation wouldn't have done much. But you start to think, this could, like, if that werewolf keeps going here, which he didn't. I still think it's a bit easy. It's so hard to judge, isn't it? Because the D20, there's just so much could happen with D20. Like I said earlier, you could set this up to be slightly harder, and then if you roll bad, like, the game could be over quite quickly. So
yeah,
I suppose it's just one of the things, isn't it? Like, we did over the piece, we rolled very, very well today, I would say.
Early on it was ridiculous, but you know, if we'd been even more strategic about it and all of your characters and mine went together in one group. Every time we fought one individual thing, it would be a case of, right, well, we've all surrounded it. We've got plus 10 mm-hmm. to every fight. We wouldn't have a problem. So I think the scenario could be a bit better balanced in that sense, you know, rather than allowing us to be able to just pick them off one by one. But so we didn't do that, though, because we thought, well, to hell with it. Let's make a narrative out of it. You go your way. I went my own way towards the wagon. You went to the barn. Grub on 6 health because he had the sword, the silver dagger. I'm going to keep calling it a sword. I thought, do you know what? Come on, let's do it. Let's get in there for the story's sake. So I guess you make of it what you want. But yeah, it could be a bit better balance, a couple more monsters on the outside, I think.
I was keeping a track of kills there. Gunther, he got 1 kill. Coven got 1 kill before he then, well, in theory, got 3 because he became a werewolf and killed 2 people. So Gunther 1, Coven 1, Orla got 2, including the werewolf that once was Coven. And our Rangers, the star men of the show, Grub on 3 kills, Harold Halfork on 3 kills. So
excellent work.
Yeah, you need your big players to step up in these situations, don't you? So we've now got a couple of roles to do for the characters who were reduced to 0 health.
Oh, yeah.
Before we then find out like how many extra points we got, because I think we could level up as well. Right, I've looked out the survival table, and do you want to roll for
Nicolan
first then?
Who may or may not be a werewolf.
Yeah, well, that's it. If he dies, I think he, in theory, just becomes a werewolf. I mean, we're never going to use him again, but it's still interesting to know.
Yeah. Any modifiers, or is it just a straight roll?
No, it's just a straight roll on that there table.
Right, so 9 upwards is a full recovery. Otherwise, we've got an issue. Let's see. It's a 15.
Yeah, he's totally fine, isn't he? Totally fine. He is an aristocrat, so he's probably eating quite well over his life.
Private healthcare.
Yeah, pupa.
Yeah. We'll send in an ambulance outside the hospital for 2 hours for him.
Seb.
No.
What did he roll? I can't quite 6. See it.
I thought 6. It was a 9. I thought he was right, but nope.
Badly wounded. Let's see what it says about that. The figure has suffered a grievous wound. It will heal, but it's going to take time. If the figure is a ranger, he's not. He must start the next game at -5. If he's a companion, he could start at -5 or he could miss it. Again, these auxiliaries, I don't know. Maybe Orla, you would use her again because she's got the bow, but mm-hmm. the other guys, I don't know if they add very much, to be honest. We'll have to get great-great-grandson of Goatsy back.
Yes.
And use him in our next mission, and he'll inevitably die, won't he?
Goatsy's dog. Which reminds me, just as an aside, I was in the supermarket the other day. There's a film out called Bone Alone.
Bone Alone?
Yeah, which I thought was a porn version, but
yeah,
no,
I was going to say, yeah, it's interesting about, for a supermarket.
Yeah. No, it's about a dog who's been left home alone, and it's basically the same story as Home Alone.
2 burglars and lots of hijinks and
plenty of
victory
hijinks.
For the good in the end.
With a bit of adversity in the all is lost moment towards the end, I believe, yeah.
Be funny if it was like PG rating, but at one point the dog just ripped the throat out of one of the guys. Aye. And
it gets put down at the end.
Yeah. Aye, the burglar sues, because according to the Daily Mail, that happens every week. So
devil dogs.
Let's see how much points we accumulated from that. Okay, 2 XP for each giant fly, zombie and wolf killed. So by my reckoning, or not by my reckoning, by my notes, we have, was that a rat as well? Doesn't mention a rat. It's a bit unfair.
You what, mate?
Yeah, giant fly, swamp zombie, wolf, grim wolf. No mention of rats. Is that just because they're so weak? I suppose nothing we could do about it.
Oh, well. Even Rent-A-Kill get paid, like.
Okay, so that's 12 points for all the minions that we killed.
Bro.
Each werewolf, 10 points each. That's 20. I feel like Carol Vorderman in Countdown here.
Yeah.
20 points for revealing which auxiliary companion was the werewolf. Thank you very much. And 10 points for each ox companion other than the werewolf and villager that is on the table at the end. So what we got there?
Loads.
Three of the civilians and two of the auxiliaries.
And we've got Michael row your boat ashore there in the middle of the pond. one, two, three, four.
Because, yeah, one, we had Coven turning into the werewolf and the other two died. Yeah. So that is...
I'm glad we found those kids in the old man.
40 points. 92 points.
Not a bad
tally. How about that? So we actually had, going into this, we had 72 points.
So we go 2 to 3 is 100.
Aye, so we're basically left with 64 points each now.
But we've gone up a level.
We've gone up a level. We have gone up to level 3, which means we gain recruitment points.
Lovely.
So we're finished that game. We've played it properly this time. What's your summary overall now that we've completed it?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I loved the extra jeopardy of the werewolf, who's it going to be, and so on. I would like to see something a bit more fraught, needing a bit more tactic and stuff. And I'm looking forward to fighting human enemies at some point.
Back to gnolls.
Yeah, because it's all been spiders and wolves and flies, oh my.
Yeah, I was thinking of doing because I've got a dungeon kit. I've got Dungeon Saga, the game, but you could use the dungeon tiles for this. So I was thinking of doing a wee dungeon bash for us next. I think that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, we could always get the new hero quest if we get, 200 quid between us or whatever.
Yeah,
is it
expensive?
Yeah.
Our question of the month for April 2024 is, have you ever tried to convince a 40k or Age of Sigmar player to play a non-GW miniatures game? If so, what was the response? What game did you play? And crucially, did they enjoy it? I'd love to hear about your own experiences on this front, and you could record your audio feedback by going to bedroombattlefields.com/voicemail. That's bedroombattlefields.com/voicemail. And now, back to the show. Aye, so I did enjoy it. I thought it was a touch easy, but I could see why, a couple of bad rolls, it could completely flip on its head. So,
As I get older and I still play the odd computer game and stuff, it's like, nowadays my gaming experience is more about the story anyway, or the experience, than the absolute hardcore difficulty.
Aye, yeah, definitely. No fun in getting your arse kicked, is there?
No.
So with Blood Moon finally out the way, with the werewolves finally put to bed, I wanted to show you something, Robert. I've been playing with this open AI software.
Yes.
Which is frighteningly incredible, I suppose. It's like Skynet. And I thought there was I think there's potential in this for gaming, whether it's miniature gaming or RPG gaming or stuff like that. So you could basically type anything into this software. It's giving you an example there, write a tagline for an ice cream shop. But as you know, you've been getting WhatsApp messages for me, and it's like, write a story about a man who's got a pub up his bum. And it tackles the subject and presents it in as factual a way as it can, which sounds like a Viz story, doesn't it?
It would be a pass in high school English, that's for sure, yeah.
So, leaning on your RPG experience, Robert, you've got dungeon masters and people creating scenarios and monsters and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You could type anything in here, couldn't you? What'll I write? Let's say, would that do? Describe a Dungeons & Dragons scenario?
Maybe, if it can understand what Dungeons & Dragons is as a concept. I cannot believe what I'm seeing here.
You want to read that out once it spits it all out?
I'm excited to read it.
Hang on, we've just got a wee bit more to go. Right, okay. Let us know what the AI has spat out.
Literally, it has written this in front of us. It's just like War Games in 1982, the movie. Just how it's all appeared. There are 5 adventurers in a party. A paladin, a druid, a rogue, a bard, and a ranger. I mean, so straight away, it knows the classes from Dungeons & Dragons specifically. That's mental. The party has ventured into a long-forgotten dungeon in search of an ancient magical artifact. The paladin is the leader of the group and is a holy warrior. I can't get this. Strong in both courage and faith. The druid is a nature-focused spellcaster, drawing their power from the natural world. The rogue is a master of stealth and deception, capable of moving through the shadows. The bard is a master of music and charm, capable of inspiring courage in allies and weakening foes. Finally, the ranger is an expert marksman, able to take out enemies from afar. I mean, it's like it must have taken from the wiki page or something, because that's...
It uses the internet. Like, it just pulls all the internet's knowledge and...
But it didn't even need to load.
Yeah, like I say, Skynet, humans are doomed.
I mean, my dad's kitchen light still takes longer to come on when you press the switch than it did this took to bloody write that. As they explore the dungeon, the adventurers face a variety of challenges. They must battle monsters like giant spiders, orcs, and dragons. They must brave traps and puzzles that test their wits and their courage. They must also face their own inner demons as they push themselves to the limits of their physical and mental capabilities. I mean, inner demons like being a werewolf, Coven. No, who was it? It was Coven. Eventually, the adventurers make their way to the heart of the dungeon. There they find the magical artifact they have been searching for, but with it comes a powerful enemy. The adventurers must now use all of their skills and abilities to defeat their foe and claim the artifact. So it really does leave it open for what's actually to come.
Yeah, but watch this, because it learns what it said already, so I could now ask it follow-up questions. So it talks about this powerful enemy. So what have I written there, Robert?
What is the powerful enemy? Describe it and make it something unusual.
Right, let's see what the AI's got for us.
The powerful enemy the adventurers face is a powerful demonic entity known as a Balor, which for fans of Lord of the Rings is like the equivalent of a Balrog, but Wizards of the Coast that do Dungeons and Dragons, they were up against copyright, so they had to call it a Balor. But yeah, it's a Balrog. It appears as a tall figure with skin made of burning flame and wings of pure darkness. Its eyes are pits of inky blackness. In its hands it wields a long sword of pure fire, capable of burning through any armor or shield. The Balor can also cast powerful dark magic, capable of draining the life force of its opponents.
And then watch this. Why is the Balor wearing a Spice Girls t-shirt?
The Balor is wearing a Spice Girls t-shirt as a sign of its ironic sense of humor. I'm scared. It is a reminder to the adventurers of the ultimate futility of their mission, as no matter how powerful they become, they will never be able to outmatch such a powerful entity.
Where did it get its pink hot pants?
The Balor acquired its pink hot pants from a former adventurer who foolishly attempted to battle it in its lair. As a reminder of its victory, the Balor keeps the hot pants as a trophy.
As a reminder of its victory. That's an excuse for getting caught wearing hot. But it's just to remind me of the time that this foolish adventurer kind of came in here and, anyway.
This is incredible stuff.
So what must we roll to steal? I was going to say to defeat it, but I'm going to steal the hot pants.
I've read fan fiction that's worse than this.
Is there any good fan fiction?
To steal the hot pants from the Balor, the adventurers must roll a stealth check. That's incredible.
We've just been playing a game with a stealth check. Now I'm scared.
This check must beat the Balor's perception check in order to succeed. I mean, that's literally how D&D works, right? For that sort of thing. And it knows that. It must have already, read all of Earth's defense systems and is now ready to implement full control.
What did we roll?
The adventurers rolled a 15 on the stealth check. Is that going to be enough? I'm sure its passive perception must be pretty high.
Succeed?
Yes, the adventurers succeeded in stealing the hot pants from the Balor.
So, Robert, we've played a miniature game here. It took me the best part of a year to paint all this stuff. I had to buy terrain, I had to make terrain, we had to get together today. We could have just sat on this AI thing and had an adventure, couldn't we? We've now stole some hot pants from a Balor. in what, like 6 minutes? And again, I don't want to get a bit samey. I was going to try and steal the Spice Girls t-shirt too, but I think the listener gets the point. Like, this stuff is incredible. Let me just, if I get rid of all that and watch this, write a 28mm fantasy skirmish rule set. Good. Warriors of the Ancient Realm. 28mm fantasy. God, we're getting all the details here. It's properly spitting stuff out. Introduction. Warriors of the Ancient Realm is a 28mm tabletop fantasy skirmish game. Players will build and command warbands of heroes, monsters and creatures from the realms of fantasy. We've got game set up. We've got warbands. We choose between 12 models, fantasy races and creatures. Battlefield. We talk about terrain. We start to talk about, we've got a movement phase, a combat phase. Like, this is just making up. We've got six-sided die. We've got attack values. I mean, it's, these things are pretty generic just because that's the nature of gaming, but
I might get it to write my master's thesis if I tell
it. The thing
enough.
Is, you can. That's the thing. Like, you could get it to, write business proposals. You could get it to write, like, you could get it to write a song. Let's have a song. Write a song about, what was it? A Balrog
or a Balor?
Balor.
Yeah.
Wearing pink hot pants.
And a Hulk Hogan t-shirt.
Hulk Hogan t-shirt, okay.
I am a real Middle-Earthian.
In a dungeon. Because I want to keep some fantasy theme. What is it?
Mr. G. The original G. There we go.
Dungian. Who put the dung in dungeon? Right, let's see what we've got. Okay, do you want to do verse one or the chorus?
Yeah. I'll go for the verse one. Right. Although it's already onto the next song in the album, I think. A Balor in a dungeon, what a sight to see, standing there in pink hot pants and a Hulk Hogan tee. So we're going for iambic pentameter, that's good. The other monsters laugh, can't believe their eyes, as he sashays through the dungeon, the bravest of the bold.
Okay, we've got the chorus. In the dungeon, a Balor wearing pink hot pants and a Hulk Hogan t-shirt. God, that's a mouthful. In the dungeon where the monsters gather round. He's the king of the dungeon, ain't afraid to show it. In the dungeon, a Balor wearing pink hot pants and a Hulk Hogan t-shirt. We've got a verse two here.
He struts around with confidence, eyes of steel and gold. He sings a song of courage, the monsters all behold. That's good, like beholders.
That is good.
He's the talk of the dungeon. They love his style and flair, though they don't understand him. They know he's full of care.
Fucking hell. In the dungeon, a Balor wearing pink hot. I can't say that. That's such a mouthful. For such an eloquent second verse, the chorus is a fucking shambles.
Yeah. There's a bridge. It's even included a bridge.
Right, we won't kick the arse out at Robert, but give us one more topic. It could be a song, it could be a scenario, you could get it to describe a creature. It's totally up to you.
Sherlock Holmes and Skeletor run a bed and breakfast.
Sherlock Holmes.
You've been listening to Tabletop Gaming.
And Skeletor. Go on then. What have we got?
Sherlock Holmes and Skeletor were two unlikely friends who had one thing in common. They both loved running a bed and breakfast. After a chance meeting at a local pub, the pair decided to join forces and open up their own B&B. The pair renovated an old Victorian house in the heart of London, just next to 221B Baker Street, I suppose, and opened up the doors to the establishment. They called it the Mystery B&B. I love it. And it quickly became a popular destination for visitors looking for a unique stay in the city. Sherlock and Skeletor took great pride in their work, offering guests a luxurious experience that included private rooms, delicious breakfasts, and warm hospitality. They even added a few special touches to their B&B, such as a collection of vintage detective novels and a secret passage leading to a hidden garden. I know who did what there. However, not everyone was a fan of the new venture. Some of the locals were suspicious of the two friends, believing that they were up to no good. But Holmes and Skeletor soon proved them wrong, as their B&B was always filled with happy guests. In the end, Sherlock Holmes and Skeletor were a success in the bed and breakfast business. The Mystery B&B was a popular destination for travellers from all walks of life, each of whom left with a smile on their face. And despite their differences, the two friends were forever bonded by their shared love of running a successful business.
Wait, I've got a good follow-up.
How did Skeletor respond to He-Man's bad TripAdvisor review, complaining that his black pudding was burnt? Skeletor was not pleased to see the bad TripAdvisor review from He-Man about his black pudding being burnt. He was determined to make it right, so he got on the phone and called He-Man to apologise. He explained to He-Man that he'd been having some trouble with the stove and that the black pudding had been overcooked. He offered to make it right by sending him a fresh batch of black pudding and invited him to come back and stay at the B&B. He-Man was impressed by Skeletor's willingness to make amends and accepted his offer. Skeletor was relieved that He-Man had given them a second chance and vowed to do better next time. From then on, he made sure that all of his breakfasts were cooked to perfection.
All right, what have I typed?
What did Skeletor do when He-Man shit the bed? This is not what I thought I'd be doing 2 days before Christmas. Oh, well.
Are you going to read it or do you want me to read it?
I can buy toys for my kids on Boxing Day. You read this one, why not?
When He-Man accidentally soiled the bed, Skeletor was quick to take action. He immediately began to clean up the mess using cleaning supplies he had on hand. He then called the local dry cleaner to come pick up the bedding and sheets for cleaning.
This is not classic Skeletor, I have to say. He's very conciliatory.
Skeletor apologised to you.
Do you want me to read it from here?
Why? Why did Skeletor apologise? It wasn't his fault. Wait a minute.
You're on the skids, He-Man.
Why was he saying sorry? Right, wait a minute. Skeletor apologised to He-Man for the inconvenience and offered to buy him a new set of bedding. He-Man was embarrassed, but Skeletor was understanding and compassionate. He was relieved when He-Man accepted his offer and the two of them went shopping for new bedding together.
The two of them went shopping for new bedding together.
What does it say at the end?
In the end, Skeletor's kindness and understanding had won He-Man over. He was grateful for Skeletor's kindness and the two of them became good friends. From that day forward, they had a standing agreement that Skeletor would always be there to help He-Man if he ever needed it. Sherlock's looking on like, I'm not happy about this. This is not okay. So,
let's just recap there. Like,
the times you cried on me, talking about that blonde bastard. Now yous are all buying fucking bedding, is it?
So He-Man had like publicly shit on him. I mean, privately shit on him too. He'd publicly shit on him on TripAdvisor. So He-Man, his Skeletor gets him back, makes him like a free breakfast, butters him up, and then He-Man shits the bed. And then Skeletor says he's sorry. And then he takes him shopping and says, I'll always be there for you. So
the one weapon Skeletor used to finally defeat He-Man was kindness.
Yeah, there you go.
There's a Saturday morning morality special for you. I think I need to go home now.
Yeah, I think we need to stop because
not just because I want to go and do more of this at home.
I do.
Yeah.
All right, so I know that got a wee bit silly at the end there, but the point still stands. I think this is really useful technology if deployed in the right way, which we certainly weren't doing there, were we? But just to wrap up this episode, I got the AI to spit out a couple of other wee things for us. I'd asked it for some examples of a dungeon master using AI in D&D, so check some of this stuff out. It says Dungeon Master generated encounters. AI can be used to generate dynamic and challenging encounters for players based on the game's current state. This could include customizing the difficulty of the encounter, as well as adding unique elements such as powerful monsters or traps. Number two, AI-driven NPCs. AI can be used to create believable and dynamic NPCs. These NPCs could interact with players in a realistic manner, responding to the players' words and actions. Number three, AI-controlled monsters. AI could be used to control the monsters in the game, making them more unpredictable and challenging. This could include monsters that can adapt to players' tactics and strategies, making for a more dynamic and engaging experience. Number four, AI-generated quests. AI could be used to generate unique and interesting quests for players to complete. These quests could include various objectives and enemies, as well as unique rewards and storylines. And number five, AI-controlled world events. AI could be used to create and control random world events. These events could range from natural disasters to political turmoil and could have a profound impact on the game's world and characters. And likewise, a wee bit on miniature wargames as well. So AI-generated scenarios. AI could be used to generate unique and dynamic scenarios for players to play out. This could include customizing the battlefield, terrain, objectives, and enemies. AI-generated units. AI could be used to generate units for players to command. This could include customizing the unit's stats, equipment, and abilities. AI-controlled enemies. AI could be used to control enemy units, making them more unpredictable and challenging. This could include enemy units that could adapt to the player's tactics and strategies. AI-generated strategies. AI could be used to generate strategies for players to follow. This could include customizing the tactics, objectives, and resources available. And AI-controlled events. AI could be used to generate and control various events on the battlefield. This could include weather, terrain, and even random events that could affect the game. So a lot of overlaps there between the RPG and the miniature wargame stuff, but again, the point stands, this technology in its very early days, if deployed correctly, could be really beneficial, especially to folks that are forced into sort of playing solo scenarios as well. So it's very much watch this space. It's not something I know anything about really. I'm just playing about with it. I'm not an evangelist of it or anything, but I thought it was definitely a topical thing to point you in the direction of if you're not aware of it already. Alright, time of recording, it is the 29th of December. It's that weird week between Christmas and New Year where you drink beer and eat sweets and don't really know what day it is. But I'm meeting up with Robert for a pint. I think we mentioned that in our recording that we were going to do that. So today is that day. So I'm looking forward to that. And if you're listening to this around the time of recording, I want to just wish you all the very best for 2023. Christmas was decent here. I got a copy of Dice Men from my daughter. So that's the Ian Livingston, Steve Jackson book, The Origin Story of Games Workshop. I've absolutely loved it so far. It's tremendously put together, really well written, loads of brilliant photos in there. So it's been such an enjoyable read. I thoroughly recommend it if you've not got a copy already. That said, Dice Men by Ian Livingston and Steve Jackson. Right then, I better go and get dressed. I promise you I'm not naked when I'm recording this, but I better go and get dressed better than I am at the moment. And like I say, wishing you all the very best for 2023, and we'll catch up again on the next episode.